and welcome back to our special edition of Health and Wealth In-Depth program. We are finishing up our conversation with Brandon Homer of the Hoyt Moraine Homer Law Firm in Jefferson. And so, Brandon, if you wouldn't mind telling us about whether or not someone should have an itemized list of everything in their will and or who has the power to make those changes in a will or an estate plan.
Itemization in an estate plan, or let's use the will as the example here, it is totally dependent upon the scope in which you want to get specific on what goes to whom after you're gone. In that family of four scenario, let's assume under scenario A that mom and dad, the survivor of the two of them passes, they just want everything to go to the kids share and share alike, meaning equal 50-50 split. Under that case, you don't need to list specific items of property and who they're supposed to go to in your will because it's all encompassing. It just gets divided by what's called the residue under the will. Under an alternative scenario, let's say mom and dad have multiple different types of assets and they want this thing to go to the son and this thing to go to the daughter. In that scenario, because those are your stated goals, those have to be itemized in your will. So let's say, for instance, mom and dad have a farm and they also own a home. The farm's supposed to go to child number one and the home's supposed to go to child number two. If those are the goals, they have to be listed in the will. One thing that clients oftentimes mistake is that, oh, does that mean that I have to list every item of personal property that I have? Personal property being stuff like TVs, furniture, household goods, jewelry, firearms, vehicles. Those do not all have to be listed in the will, unless, of course, you have a specific item that you want to go to a specific person. But we also have a mechanism. It's called a personal property memorandum that I provide to all clients that have estate planning projects with me. It's a document that's outside of the will. It's referenced in the will that is sort of a living document you can change with time, which is important because those items are typically the things that either get bought, sold, or change after you've gotten your document initially set up.
Going right along here, are do not resuscitate orders typically found in an estate plan or a will? Because you do hear about those quite often when somebody's getting ready to be at the end of their life.
Of course. Yeah. I'm glad you asked that because it's oftentimes something that especially older clients will ask me about. Do not resuscitate documents are definitely important, but that is a mechanism that's actually part of the medical profession, not necessarily the legal profession. I'm not saying there aren't attorneys out there that don't help with those, but the point is that that's a document that's essentially put together by your practitioners, your medical practitioners. It outlines, of course, things like not being able to resuscitate somebody if they are in need of first responder type care. But that document, if you're interested, I always tell clients, go and talk to your general practitioner. They will get you set up with the document. It does not have to be listed in the will or in your estate planning documents. However, what I do say is, in the family of four scenario, like I've already mentioned, if mom and dad have DNRs, they need to communicate that to the kids so that they know.
And then, I guess, jumping off from that, are DNRs then more commonplace nowadays? And then what happens if you don't have a DNR? Does that mean that there is no estate plan then?
I would say that DNRs are probably pretty commonplace, although because we don't prepare them ourselves as attorneys, I don't know for sure how many of my clients have them. Not having one does not mean that you don't have an estate plan. As I mentioned, it's a document that's separate from your estate plan. So your power of attorney documents, your will, your trust, whatever your estate plan consists of, operates independently from a DNR. To include a healthcare power of attorney is, again, separate from a DNR.
And then lastly, what are some of the more difficulties that families face when executing a will or an estate plan after a family member dies?
So what I would say is the difference between executing and administering an estate. Executing the will happens long before death. That's when you put it down in writing and you sign it. The part that people struggle with on the administration of an estate is, of course, A, the grief that you're dealing with a family member or a loved one that's passed away, dealing with expenses like last illnesses, creditors, if there's any debts that were owed by the person that passed away, property issues that may have been known by the person when they were alive but weren't handled before they passed, not communicating with your family members and having clarity on expectations before you passed away. Those are all things that we talk about on a daily basis with our clients. And then, of course, one of the things that people always ask me about, and it's relative and independent based on your own circumstances, but people oftentimes ask me when they're setting up their estate plan, what do you think is fair? What should I be giving to so-and-so? And that is something that is independent of every person and what their desires and goals are in life and how they feel they should treat their loved ones that are left behind. But what I can say is fair is almost never considered equal, quote unquote equal. It's just whatever you think is right. But those are things that you should be talking about with your legal professional if you're interested in this area. And there are plenty of practitioners out there that do this type of work.
And that's a look at estate plans and wills with our guest, Brandon Homer of the Hoyt Marine Homer Law Firm in Jefferson, on the special edition of Health and Wealth In-Depth program on the Raccoon Valley Radio Network.